When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, it's Sunday right now. That means it's the Hollywood and Mike Show. Welcome everybody over on the radio. We have a special guest, and it's Dr. Harley, man. I wonder what kind of doctor he is. Does he like it up the exhaust pipe or what? We got to ask him that. But anyway, today we're going to be talking about what is Harley Davidson's future, baby? I don't know, man. That Sportster S, it ain't looking good right now. It's not bringing people to the table for Harley Davidson. And we're going to find out why, man. Why is this happening to Harley Davidson right now? I don't know, man. I'm a fan. I'm hoping that they do better. But what manufacturers out there are having any luck with these damn Generation Z riders and millennials, I have to say, you know, guys like Mike, okay? Don't be like Mike. Don't do it. His generation is a bunch of weirdos. I'm just trying to tell you here, man. Look at him. He's got one leg and stuff. I bet you know what? He's like Luke Skywalker, but backwards. But backwards, okay? You know what, though? This technology that's coming up that they're putting on all kinds of cars and stuff, I wonder if it's going to be like legs and stuff. They're going to make his leg look like it's real or something. I tell you what, man, getting back into the car industry and, you know, in the repair industry is like, you kidding me? I had to go change a battery in a BMW. It was in a freaking trunk under a bunch of garbage. I was like, you know what? This sucks. And I just can imagine that going on with motorcycles in the future. Hell, look at that Yamaha that they caught coming out. It looks like a Tron bike, for Jesus Christ. I don't get it, man. I guess I'm old. It's the birthday today, 50 years old. China Doll took care of Hollywood. A bunch of surprises came out. Didn't think it would happen, but it did. Let's bring in Mike Ball right now, my co-host. Here he is. Yes, the one-legged freaking Mikey, man. What's up, man?
Here we go. Happy 50.
Oh, my goodness gracious, man. I'm a half a century years old. Where the hell did it go? You better be careful, man.
Yeah, man. I'm half of you, essentially. So isn't that weird? So we're going to find out the difference of opinions in these motorcycles. It's definitely going to be interesting, you know, because you got your generation of boomers and stuff like that, and then you got me, you know?
So I don't think he knows what the hell is a boomer, man. You know, I'm Generation X there, buddy.
Well, you're definitely getting up there. So anyways, we're going to see how this works out, because it's going to be fun, because you mentioned the Sportster S, and I actually had my own opinions when that came out. So it's going to be interesting seeing how our opinions line up on this.
Well, it's going to be interesting, because hopefully somebody from Harley Davidson is going to be watching and takes notes to, you know what, I truly believe that, yes, they got a balancing act that they got to do to bring in the new riders, but they can't forget their core base is what I'm saying here.
No, absolutely. You can't forget the people that made you in the motorsport, you know, company itself. Like, who was the ones that kept you alive when you were dying, a dying breed, you know? Right. Don't forget who kept you alive, kept you here. And that's always lost in translation. It's always lost.
You're damn right, man. But we got the man. We got the legend. But I do want to say thanks to China Doll. It was a real kick-ass birthday. She was a little freaking mischievous and stuff like that. Took care of it all. Got some friends involved that I didn't know. And she rocks and rolls. She'll tell you more about that tomorrow, but let's bring in Dr. Harley. What a man to talk about this subject on. What's up, Dr. Harley?
Hollywood, Mike Ball, good evening. Hollywood, happy birthday, man. Welcome to the 50s club.
That's right. Goodness. Your ARP card is in the mail. It's headed to your way right now to your house.
You're officially an old bastard like me.
You get discounts and everything. Yep.
I'm telling you, man, that sucks. I want to be out of this 50 club already. I don't like it.
They should give you discounts at, you know, Harley Davidson, you know, but apparently those are the only, you know, guys buying those new motorcycles anymore is those, you know, really old guys. So,
well, you know what? I think I have to agree with them, Dr. Harley, is that our age group are, let's say, you know, 40s and up that are buying these bikes.
That's the core. That is their core customer at the dealerships. And, you know, I'm going to put this right out there up front. We are not Harley Davidson Corporate's customer.
No, that's right.
The dealerships are their customer, and we are the dealership's customer. Harley needs to go back to regional reps to find out what's happening at the dealerships and report back.
Very damn well said right there. By the way, I will have China Doll in here later on to give a lady's perspective on Harley Davidson, but she's out doing something right now, but she'll be in here. I'll have her here in the second half of the show. What do you think about that, Mike? I think that's a huge freaking point right there when it comes to Harley, is the company needs to start going back to regional representation to know what's going on with their product.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all kind of privatized now, right? You know, you've got like these own dealerships that like run off of, yes, they have to have a certain core, whatever of minimums, but they kind of run on their own accord. As far as I've seen, I'm not like someone that knows the dealership side of everything. Cause I'm going to be honest. I am that generation where we're looking on like, it used to be Craigslist, but now it's like Facebook Marketplace. It's like the OfferUps. That's where a lot of my generation is looking to buy their motorcycles. They're not looking to buy brand new anymore. They're looking to buy these new or used bikes. And that's what is appealing to us and what is actually in our price range in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Very well said, man. Very well said right there. And I think with your generation, it's more of the pocketbook and the reliability than it is a lifestyle.
That too. It definitely can be that way too. It necessarily wasn't that way for me, but objectively speaking, absolutely. Yes.
What do you think, Harley, that it's more about a transportation thing than it is a lifestyle? And that's where Harley Davidson overextended itself, where it just backed itself into a corner, trying to support one angle.
Yeah, well, you know, the Harley-Davidson lifestyle is always going to be there one way or another, whether it's, you know, done at the dealership or done by the individual rider, you know, because someone buys a Harley, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to buy everything in leather and throw that on. And, you know, because that's the image they got from Easy Rider and all the other shows. It's up Pro Monkey. As far as reliability, Harley's over the years, I would say since 2007 to current, the reliability has gone way up. I mean, the AMF years, which were the nightmare years, where the reliability is you could rely on to, you know, mark their territory with oil.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think about what Professional Monkey just said? He bought an 11-year-old Dyna. A dealer wasn't an option. Nothing that old out there, and prices are way too high, and I'm going to kill Mikey's freaking finger covering us up all the time. But
he's right. The prices are up there because, you know, Harley is giving top dollar. Well, the dealerships are giving top dollar on trade-in to move that new piece of bike, that new equipment. Case in point, I traded in a 2019 Road Glide with 15,000 miles on it. It was 3 years old for a brand new CVO, and they gave me $28,000 on trade. So it cost me $1,000 to own that Road Glide for 3 years and with 15,000 miles on it. So of course that sold, the dealer had to sell it for, you know, $31,000 for a 3-year-old bike.
But what do you think about the point, what he said, because I know what he's talking about. Now they won't even touch a bike in a dealership that's 11 year or 10 years old. The work on it is what I'm talking about. Okay. It's kind of like it's all, let's rush to sell it, but hey, we're not going to work on it on you. I Very think true. Is this because that they're doing what the CEO said, where they're going to function on higher pricing bikes like the CVO line, or are they just trying to forget the people that they tried to build?
Well, the issue is, and it goes right down to training. You know, when someone goes to MMI, they mm-hmm. have their basic course, and then you go into your brand specific course. And once you graduate that, then you get into the performance and legacy repair, which would be your twin cams and your Evos. And most of the students don't pay that extra cost or spend that extra time in school. They just want to get out in the field and work. So the only experience and education they have is on the current models.
Right.
That's what they're taught right from the beginning. And, you know, when I went to school, it was you learn the legacy before you learn the new stuff.
Well, that's a good point. Good
point right there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, because if you bring in an Evo motor to a dealership to have them work on it, they don't know what they're doing, or even twin cams now.
Oh, you're damn right on that, man. And Evo, they won't even go near it with a 10-foot pole, and that's unfortunate right there. But at the same time, that does help people who are I always believed you had to be able to work on your own bike, but I guess that type of thinking isn't around anymore, and that's unfortunate.
That part is true. That part is also true.
I like it when people don't work on their own bikes because it puts some pocket change in my pocket because I work on their bike.
Yep. You're the guy that does it.
But what does that say where a person can't work on their own bike? Say they're out in the middle of a cornfield or something and they got to rely on somebody else to work on that motorcycle. It just rubs me wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know, you and I are the old school days. We used to go out and set our points and stuff and carry points in a condenser and a screwdriver with us.
Do you even know what a point is, Mike?
No, and that's why these things I love. It's this point, right? It's one of these points, right? Is it one of those?
I made my case.
So, see, that's what I'm saying. Like, there are certain things that I can do, but there's a lot of things that I can't do. And that's the truth. You know, and there's a lot of stuff that I haven't been taught necessarily all the way through yet either. You know, I'm always, and like I told Dr. Harley, I'm always willing to learn when something new is being taught to me, when I'm wrenching on something, but I don't love working on my bike like other people do. You know, I just don't love it that way.
Well, I think that's a good point right there, Dr. Harley. Now you're starting to see the generational differences, where his generation, Mike's, does not like tinkering around with stuff. And we were kind of joking around before we came on about our, you know, the Lockheed generation as Generation X. I think we were more self-reliant than the new generation was, like the Z's and the millennials, because we had to learn this type of stuff. And now it's like, okay, take my Apple Pay or my Google Pay, and you just fix it.
Right. Yep. I'll cash app you $100. You know, you do it for me, you know?
Yep. I mean, there's guys who ride today, and no disrespect to them at all, but they don't know the difference between a flathead and a Phillips screwdriver.
Yep. It's true.
Very true. Very true. I know China Doll talks to me all the time at her work. They actually throw the change at her because they don't know how to count their change.
Wow. They just boom, here, you figure it out and you let me know how much extra it is. You know, that's
but
crazy.
We're sitting here picking on Generation Z, but aren't we at a disadvantage, Dr. Harley, because they're more into the electronics than we're like, what the hell is this?
Well, I taught myself to keep up with the technology on the motorcycles, you know?
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not at a disadvantage. I got my own digital tech that I use where I could, you know, enable and disable features within the bikes and program TPMS, the tire pressure monitoring system, program the key fobs. If someone loses a key fob, they buy a new one. I could program it for them, so they don't have to go to the dealership and pay that $130, $150 an hour, 1 hour minimum fee.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and that's ridiculous.
But what about more of our generation where we were used to working on the mechanical side? And they're at a I'm at a disadvantage when it comes to the electrical crap, because, you know, just what, last year I finally got a damn bike that had a radio on it. Before then, it was like, yeah, I don't need no damn radios, and that's just too much headache for me right there.
Yep, but now, that's me too. I have none of that equipment either, you know.
But now, when you throw in that kind of technology, I'm like, yeah, right. You know, wait a second here.
So yeah, it's gotta be complicated.
I just can't bash on the Generation Zs or the Millennials as well.
Well, all brand manufacturers, doesn't matter Harley, motorcycle, or car, they all want their customers to bring their vehicles back to the dealerships. They really don't want the mom and pop shop working on them. They try and give you incentives saying, well, if you have us do all your services, like for instance, my wife has a Mazda. You know, she brings it there. They warranty the powertrain for life for as long as she owns the car. And then they do all the services. And the cost difference, it really isn't much of a cost difference to have them do the service or she goes someplace else. I could do it, but I'm just too busy in the garage to even worry about, you know, taking care of our cars.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said something very interesting right there. He did, Mike, about it's a mechanics thing, man. They usually don't want to work on their own stuff. They'll work on others, but they're not their own.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But Generation X and Z, I doubt they even know what a inside of garage looks like or what a wrench is. And where did that come from where you don't want to work on your own stuff?
I don't know where it comes from. If it's just like a lack of just interest altogether in the mechanic aspect, or if it's, a dying breed kind of thing. I don't really know. If we have been taught too many, like everything is done for us, like we're too used to a service-based everything. Like in our lives, you got to think what we pay for mainly is services. So, you know, having someone do something for you, like mechanically, for instance, that's going to do, you know, though you're paying for a service, you're not getting the experience granted, right? So I think we're just a too service-oriented people nowadays, rather than how it was with you guys, where you guys were like forced to like have to figure it out. It was like, you figure it out or you're shit out of luck, you know?
Well, that's very well said right there. And you know, what is Harley Davidson's future? And I think I know where they're going, and it's going to people like China Doll. You got to get her up here, man. I got her in.
Let's go ahead and get everyone there, in here. Boom.
There it is. We got China Doll in there. She did an awesome day on the birthday today. She really did. She surprised the shit out of me. But I think that's where Harley Davidson is going, is towards women. And they're reaching out to different aspects of a culture that really wasn't there 30 years ago.
Was that towards me?
Yeah. Well, you have to admit that when you first came in with me in the 90s,
yeah,
we never saw women on a motorcycle. Never.
The women always were on the back.
But now you're seeing Harley Davidson actually advertise towards women.
Yes. I mean, if you go into the dealership, you go into the side where they have like the clothing. There's more women's clothing in there than there are men's.
There's a reason for that.
You got to target the women to get the men in there to buy the bike.
Well, not only that, but you got 80% of the all of America's purchasing rate is done by women. So that's actually the reason why. So they exactly what you called it. It's sucker them in just like that. Get the guys in. All of a sudden, people are buying bikes. Yes.
What do you think about that, Dr. Harley? You think it's true that they're targeting more women and minorities than ever before during the time we were coming up.
Well, they're targeting the women because it's an untapped resource for them to tap into to create more revenues and sales, whether it's in motor clothes, motorcycles, and service. And believe it or not, I know some women that wrench on their own bikes. So, you know, they're buying parts. And, you know, I've always said it, good for them. I mean, there should not be a gender equality anywhere as far as, you know, anything. You know, if a woman could, you know, hang out and work on her own bike or, you know, go to combat. I've served with women in combat and they did their job just as well as a man. So I have no problem with it. I think it's an untapped resource that all the manufacturers should start tapping into.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, China Dow? How they're starting to advertise more to women, trying to get them through the motorcycle classes. And by the way, you know, Harley can probably say the same thing. I remember when there was none of these classes, it was just get on the damn bike and ride. Mm-hmm. And it has become, I think, a good thing for Harley Davidson to start throwing these classes. But what do you think about how they're outreaching to women now?
Well, I've noticed one tradition is every time I've walked into a Harley dealership with you, they will approach me before you. Because usually when we walk in there, and we do this on purpose, we go separate ways. And I'll get bombarded by the sales people faster than he will because they think women are ignorant.
You think that's what it is, Harley? Is they're thinking that it's an easy target? Is it kind of like car dealers are doing?
No. I think they're geared towards more of tapping into that resource of women wanting to ride their own motorcycle, not be on the back anymore. And I think that's a great idea. I mean, because now instead of having one motorcycle per house, now you have two.
What do you think, Mike?
That too. I mean, it could be like that, but I definitely think that it's definitely, in my opinion, I think it's more of a, they think that they're ignorant. You know, I definitely think it's more of that, you know, speed for sure. You know, I think that they look at women as in like, oh, they won't know, or they won't know about this, or they won't know the price point of this. So, you know, that's the one thing that kind of actually pisses me off, is it makes me feel like that they are targeting them in a bad way rather than going genuinely, hey, you actually want to get on a motorcycle. Let's actually get you on one. Rather than finessing you, you know, and that's how I look at it is the motor company sport or the company itself is trying to finesse. That's how I see it. But that's just my take.
Dr. Harley's had enough of the show, I guess.
Yeah, he was like, hey, man, I need a second. No, he needed a second. Sure. You need to recollect, you know.
Well, what's funny
is just things that I notice when I walk into the Harley dealership. Mm-hmm. They go straight for the women, and it's not just me and Hollywood going in there. I've seen other couples that walk in there and they kind of do their own thing. The women go towards bikes that they find interesting. The men go towards bikes they like to look at. And it's the same thing. The salesperson is going to go just like at a dealership. They're going to go straight up to the woman first.
Right.
But do you think it's a good idea, Harley Davidson, throwing a lot of its energy into this woke stuff, if you want to call it that, or they're throwing their money into a category that's just a minute.
Yeah. They thought of it as like a majority, like, oh, there's more people on this side. So we'll get more people like that. But realistically, that's not their audience. That's not the people that even want to ride their stuff anyways. They're catering to the wrong people. So to me, it's a waste of money. You know, right. Like you're literally wasting your time. And now you're actually stomping on top of the people that did support you for who and what you are, and maybe even politically.
Well, if you look at it, China Dow.
Yes.
Harley Davidson. It's a point to argue if they're having success with women, but I do know other manufacturers like Honda, Yamaha, Kawasaki, they're having great success with getting younger girls
Oh, yeah.
into the sport. Cause if you look at how some of these girls are getting into the crotch rockets, as we call them. I don't know what Mike's generation calls
them. Same thing.
Rice burners.
They're actually getting them into these bikes. And is it because it's a different scene than what the Harley scene is?
It's a big time different scene. And the way the women look and the way they sell the attire to go with them on those crotch rockets, like katanas.
Yeah.
A woman, I'm sorry, but, and this is from a woman's point of view, I think a woman bent over on a katana is pretty hot. Because all you see when you're behind her is ass.
Yep.
Well, you know, she has a good point there, Dr. Harley. Do you think that Harley's missing the boat on the woman customer because Kawasaki, Honda, like usual, the other manufacturers beat them to it, and they're more inclined to jump on a rice rocket than they are a Harley?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a cultural thing. It all depends on what's around them and what they've seen growing up. I mean, I know female riders that love their Hondas, Yamaha, Suzuki's, Kawasaki's, whether they're cruisers or tours, because that's what their parents had, or that's what their husband or boyfriend had. So that's why they went that way. And then the same thing goes for the women on Harley. I mean, that's what their husband had or their dad had, and they enjoyed it. So that's why they went to Harley Davidson. A lot of them start off on the smaller Japanese bikes and then work the way up to a Harley.
Now, like China Dial just said, and it was very interesting because she brought it up. It's usually me that brings that stuff up, but they sell all the apparel to that, you know, I'll call it that subculture of the motorcycling community, where they're more safety conscious than we are. Come on, we just did what we did. We're the guys, Generation X, that never wore helmets on bicycles, okay? Yeah. It drives me crazy seeing that today. It's like, oh, don't hurt yourself. Oh, my God, really? Anyway.
Well, you see the women, because I've seen numerous of them, pull up at a gas pump, and they're on their katanas or whatever, and they get off and they got that skin tight leather pants and the skin tight jacket and the helmet and the whole shebang. And they look beautiful. These women on these bikes. They look beautiful. And they get off these bikes and they're like, it's an eye turner. But then I see a woman jump off a Harley and not as many heads turn because they're just in jeans and maybe a jacket. You know, but it's like they get off them katanas, heads turn.
Well, the women I see riding on katanas and on all those other bikes over here on the East Coast, they're wearing yoga pants.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm sitting there going, that's the wrong pants to wear, because if you go down,
you're going
to
feel everything.
You might as well not be wearing anything at all.
You're going to be shredded.
What can Harley do, Dr. Harley, to try to bring some of them girls over to the dark side, if you will?
Why don't you try this? Dr. Harley, I'm walking into your dealership. How would you sell me a bike?
I would ask you, what are you looking for? Is there anything I can help you? You know, what brings you in today?
Okay, let's play this out. Let's play it out seriously.
Here it goes.
I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, what would be the best way for them to approach the women, whether they know anything about bikes or not?
Well, the best way to approach a woman is the way you approach a man. Hey, welcome. What brings you in today?
I'm looking for a bike.
Oh, excellent. What kind, do you have an idea what you're looking for?
I have no idea, but I'm very small and can't really hold up a lot of weight. So what would you suggest?
How long have you been riding, or is this be your first motorcycle?
This will be the first one.
Okay, so we're going to start looking at different bikes that are smaller for you and a little bit easier for you. Things like, you know, an older Sportster or a Softail, something that's light and nimble and easy for you to ride.
I want something fancy.
Well, then we'll start looking at the Softails that, you know, you can have, you know, the spoked wheels or the mag wheels, or you could, you know, accessorize it any way you want with soft bags or hard bags. But first,
you know what, I really
talk about accessorizing it.
I really wish that salesmen would approach people like you just did.
And yeah, to be honest, real. They don't.
A lot they around don't. Here don't. But
no, they don't here either.
I really like how he just went through that scenario right there.
You sure you don't work in a dealership, dude?
100% positive. I don't work for a dealership.
Because let me tell you, you'd catch somebody's attention the way you just approached that.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a good one right there.
If other places would approach women riders the way you just did, I think they'd sell more bikes.
Probably.
Yeah, well, you know, it comes down to training.
And this do you think a lot in the industry, especially, and we'll get back to Harley Davidson having to be able to attract this segment of the population. Do you think it's lack of training in most of these dealerships? Because God forbid, say you pulled one of these salesmen or one of these mechanics out of a dealership now and put them back in 1994, their head would be spinning.
Yeah, they wouldn't know what to do. They would not know what to do back in 1994 when the 94 FX STS was out, which would be the Springer Softail. The mechanics would not know what to do with that Springer front end, how to inspect it, how to adjust it, how to do anything with it. And that's just the front end.
Jeez.
What do you think, Mike, if we were to drag you at your age now to 1994 and put an Evolution in front of you?
Oh, I'd be fucked. I'd be fucked, especially when it comes to an Evo. You know, I got to admit, when it comes to Evos, I got an Evo specialist right down the street. So he's a good brother of mine. So that's who I would be going to personally. But no, if I had to go back to 94, let's just say, and I'm this age, nah, I'd be screwed. I'd be off to the side doing one of these, like, all right, hitchhiking.
Why do you think that's the case? Does your generation not have the confidence?
No, I definitely have the confidence. It's probably just the lack of garage time, really. Like, there's a lack of garage time because a lot of these bikes that we are buying now, they're kind of turnkey, right? And there's not a lot of major upkeep unless you've got like these baskets, you know, that you guys are creating, then sure. But if it's not a basket case, then a lot of these bikes, they kind of just run on their own. And if you just do its own little fuel, you know, you fuel it up and you do its normal oil change, you'll be fine. You know, there's not like these bikes aren't doing like as much problems as probably your guys' era, where you guys are breaking down every five freaking blocks trying to repair your stuff.
Well, that was true, Dr. Holly, but what DDK just put up from Tennessee, the Evo saved the motor company, because you are correct.
I was going to just say that. That was the motor that saved Harley Davidson.
Because it was, like Mike said, you know, you got on an iron head or a shovel head, you were broke down, you had to have a toolkit on you at all damn times.
Yep.
Where the Evo... Damn, man, that bike, you to take the engine off on the side of the road, that's how easy that bike is to work on. Yeah. But it was bulletproof.
Yes, it was. And I took my 93 Softail in 2010 from Connecticut to Sturgis and back, and I didn't have one problem with it. But, you know, Mike, going back to, you know, putting gas in and doing your scheduled oil changes, more than that, I mean, there's scheduled services there for a reason.
Well, the obvious that too. That's what I mean.
Neck bearings, belt adjustments, or chain if you're a chain drive. You know, just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, steering neck bearings, wheel bearings, all that have to be inspected at a regular basis. And if you don't, you're just creating a problem for yourself that shouldn't be there.
Well, one thing I did like and do like about China Doll, and she can talk more about this, is she actually was never afraid to jump in there, work on a car, or, you know, help work out on a bike. And awesome. That is an awesome thing that you were into. You were never afraid to get your hands dirty. But what's even cooler is nowadays you see a lot more females actually out there working on cars. You know, I just went to a different shop, and it's a whole different deal where it's newer based where I'm at now compared to where I was, where it was the older stuff is the only things we really worked on, didn't get around any technology stuff. But now it's like, damn, man, we got females working out there as techs, and there, I truly believe the younger female now is more tech savvy than, say, China Doll's generation.
Well, you know, I'm going to say that goes, it's history always repeats itself. Now, if you go back during World War II, where the factories were all nothing but women because all the men went off to war, they learned how to do it. They worked in the factories. They did everything. And then when the war was over, most of the women went back to the house and the men went back to work. So history is replaying itself. Now the women are getting out into the workforce, not just into the, you know, secretarial, which is stereotypical job for women, but they're getting out there and they are some phenomenal welders.
You know, I agree.
I mean, I'm going to pay homage to Jesse Combs. May she rest in peace. Phenomenal mechanic, phenomenal welder, phenomenal builder, and phenomenal racer. She had the whole package, you know. And there's a lot of women out there like that, and I applaud them for doing what they want to do. My wife comes out in the garage with me and wants to learn how to do things, and I teach her. You know, well, she's not ready to get grease under her fingernails.
What do you think about that, China? How are you now looking at a different generation who actually wants to do that type of stuff, that are making careers out of being a mechanic, a technician, that are getting in the working on motorcycles, getting in the working on cars? That should be a proud moment for a lot of women right there to see that kind of stuff, because now it's like, okay, we're standing on our own 2 feet. We're not just this woman that's put on an apron and in the kitchen.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with when you're going through school. And I think a lot of more schools, when girls want to go in and say they want to go into the auto shop during high school, they should be not turning them away from it and trying to get them. Well, maybe you should go into like the baking class or go be a beautician. No, if they want to do automotive, let them do it, because you know what? They're going to turn out to be something more than what some of these kids are even doing now.
There are some of these techs, like you just said, Harley, that are women, are better than any guy I know with a wrench.
Yeah. I wonder if it's because the way women problem solve and how they organize things in their head make them better than men. Because, you know, I'm going to say it. Men are like switchblades. We're good for one thing at one time. Women, they're like Swiss Army knives. They're good for everything at once.
Man, I totally agree with that one, Mike. What do you think?
No, I can't disagree with it. There's definitely not anything I can disagree with there. They're phenomenal mechanics as well. You know, as long as you can do the job, you can do the job, and that's fact. You know, and kind of like what China Doll was saying, if they want to do automotive, like when they're like going through schooling and stuff, instead of like the teachers or other people, counselors or whatever, going, oh, maybe you should be doing this. It's true. Allow them to do exactly what the hell they want to do. If they pick automotive, they picked it for a freaking reason.
Yeah. And that's the big thing nowadays. Like if I had the opportunity when I was in high school to do auto shop, I probably would have picked it. But you know what? They don't give the option was there. The problem is when you go into counseling to pick your schedule, they never put that out for the girls. It's like they're going to tell all the boys about auto shop, but they're not going to tell the girls. They need to start realizing that guys and girls can do the same stuff.
Yep.
So Harley Davidson is correct in trying to go towards that segment, Dr. Harley.
Absolutely. I think it's a brilliant move. I really do.
Let's go to another topic of conversation, where what is Harley Davidson's future? And what do you think about how they went and redesigned the Sportster, also called the Sportster X, Dr. Harley? Did they go overboard? Was that something that was going to attract the younger generation? I don't know if you guys see that on the screen.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can.
My opinion of the Sportster S, now, I could see where they were going with it, but they missed the mark. it is not the Gen Z or millennial style bike. They're looking for that street bike, street fighter type of bike, like the Bronx that they've been talking about. I think that would be a bigger hit over this. I think the Rev Max motor is a good idea, and that's where it should have stopped, because they're having all sorts of problems with the Rev Max and the Pan American and within the Sportster S. Is it a long distance bike? In my opinion, no. But I have a friend of mine who took his bike in March from Lake George, New York to Daytona Beach, Florida for Bike Week. Wow. So it can be done.
Now,
would do I do it? Absolutely not.
Do you think the concept, Dr. Harley, of marrying a Buell design with a Sportster actually worked out here?
No. I honestly think they missed the mark. I see what they're trying to do, but I think they missed their mark. I'm not a designer in any way. I just think they missed the mark with the Rev Max engine.
Well, now, what I've got to wonder is what about customization? Like, we're so into, at least I, from what I see from my generation of kids, is like everyone wants to customize their bike. And like with a bike like that, I don't see like an aftermarket craziness thing that you could do. Like, what is there to do to that? Like,
exhaust that thing is handlebars.
You know, that you got that exactly. And so you're doing your exhaust, your handlebars. Like, that's people are going to want more customization than that. And then paint, forget that. You know, we want some customization. That's right there to me is kind of lame.
Let's look at it from your generational stance. Mm-hmm. Is that something, and I'll ask Chai to Dow in a minute, is that something your generation wanted? And if it's not, why do you think that's what they gave you in a design?
I think that that's what they think we wanted. You know what I mean? I think that was a good idea in their head at the moment. Does it actually, though, target us? No, it doesn't. Because we will look at those bikes and we'll be like, nah, that's ugly compared to, you know, even the older bikes, like the older bikes, I should do bunny quotes, as in like a 2015, 2014, 2013, like these bikes that are only, you know, 9, 10, 8 years old, those have way more, you know, things that you can do to them, way more, you know, there's a whole bunch of things you can do. Now you got that engine that's in there, you've got that, it's water cooled. You've got a whole bunch of different stuff on there that I'm not even going to know how to even work on. You know, I have no idea how that thing works. And can any of us, even like my generation, we were just talking about this. Can my generation, if I can't even work on a normal V-twin like that, what makes you think I can work on a Rev Max?
Very well said. Now, China Doll, now yeah. Harley Davidson is targeting the woman.
Now,
what do you think about this bike if you were a woman? Is this targeted towards you?
No, I'm going to be honest. When the picture first came up, the first thing I thought was the handlebars are garbage and so is the pipes. The handlebars are too low and the pipes are crap. Why are they up that high? I'm burning a leg. I don't
know. Yep.
Is it that mix of?
I like the blue, but that's about it.
But is it a mix of trying to make it like a cruiser and then a rocket?
It looks to me like they're like trying to do a crotch rocket Sportster mix here.
Exactly.
And they screwed up mm-hmm. because yeah. the pipes are way too dang high.
We got to. What are the sales of that bike since understand. It's come out, you know, like what are the sales compared to like the other bikes? You know what I mean? Like that's got to be such a small percentage of what they sold last year, let's just say, compared to like, you know, a normal, let's just say a normal street bob or whatever, you know what I mean? Like it, I think those are probably missing the mark a lot compared to maybe even just like the normal Sportster.
Well, what do you think, Dr. Harley, about the price point? They got it at $13,500 off the showroom floor.
Well, you know, I did a live was a comparison because everybody says Harley's priced themselves out, that there's a lot less or less expensive options out there for a new motorcycle. Well, I did a like-for-like comparison and, you know, and believe it or not, As far as the Sportster S goes, yes, it is priced out there for an entry-level bike. It really is. But as far as their other bikes, they're actually in between some, or they're less, or they're a little bit more. So they're really not priced too far out. But as far as the Sportster S is, they're way out in left field as far as price goes.
Yeah, because the Sportster was something that, okay, I'm just getting in the riding. It's getting introduced me to Harley-Davidson, its product. And it's like everything with Harley-Davidson. It was like the live wire. They screwed that shit up real quick with the $30,000 price point. But the Sportster was supposed to be an entry-level type of bike for $6,000, $7,000.
Yeah, it really is, like I said, priced way out there. And in the outer atmosphere for an entry level bike, you know, when you look at that bike for 13 grand, or you could get a $500 more, get a Softail Standard,
right?
Which, yes, in my opinion, it's 10 times the bike, and it has no technology like the Sportster S. You know, Sportster S, believe it or not, you got GPS built in that thing. I don't know if you've ever ridden one, Hollywood. I took a Sportster S out for a ride, and as soon as I started it up, I shut it off because I thought something was broken the motor. I said, no, that's just how it's not.
You're like, all right, this doesn't sound right. I got to turn this off, you know?
I got 7 miles into a 15-mile test ride, and I couldn't wait to get off this stupid thing.
Well, I guess, Hollywood, you're not going to test ride one of them, huh?
Well, you know what? One bike I do want to test ride that got my attention, and we're going to bring that up right now, is I see Harley-Davidson trying to turn in every damn direction that there is to try to hit that sweet spot of bringing somebody in. This one could, like China Dow said, be reminiscent of a crotch rocket married to a somewhat of a Sportster. But this one right here, I really would like to take a ride on, and that is the Pan America. And I truly believe that they are giving the African Twin a run for its money in the outdoor sports category. What do you think, Dr. Arley?
Well, actually, they are, believe it or not, leading in sales in that category of motorcycle, that they are selling more Pan Americans than their competitors. I think it's priced just a little too high. But for what you get, if you know, the top of the line with the automatic height adjustment or rider seat adjustment and all that, I think it's a good bike. However, it's that RevMax motor, and I think it still has a lot of research and development needs to happen to make it right.
Do you think that's a good combination right there of an off-road and the RevMax engine, or do you think another engine should have went into that one?
Definitely not an air-cooled motor, because when you're riding off-road, you get chances of a lot of mud slinging up and get caught up in the cooling fins, and you can overheat the bike. So definitely a liquid-cooled motor is the way to go. But I think they had to do a lot more research and development before they released it, because if they did, they would not have had the problems that they're having with them breaking down as much.
Now, China Dow, when I was buying the CVO, the guy ahead of us actually was buying one of these.
Yes, he was.
And we both liked this damn bike.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, tells you Harley might be on to something when a guy in my generation was like, yeah, dude, this bike rocks here.
Yeah.
Well, I like the one that he bought because the paint, it was like a black.
The black one. Yeah.
It was the black paint. And like the paint on this one in the picture is kind of, that's sad.
Sorry. Well, what did you think about the design of the bike?
The design of it. And I love how the exhaust is on this one, how the pipe scoops up, makes it look way more sporty. And it kind of fits in with like the crotch rocket look with how the pipes are, and the handlebars are a little bit higher. I probably would have tweaked them a little bit more, just saying, just because every bike I've ever been around, they're a little higher than that. But because I don't want to really be on a crotch rocket, I don't want the hunched over bad back kind of feeling. So I'd probably raise those up a touch. Yep. But the way the back of it just kind of flows. I don't know much about engines. I'm good at maybe spark plugs and stuff, but other than that, I don't have a clue what Dr. Harley said. it's good knowledge.
What do you think, Mike? Is that something that was breaking into the off-road sector and Harley Davidson was right for doing that?
Absolutely. They were 100% right for it. The one thing, the gripe that I've got is I'm a short dude compared to, it's got the rider adjustable, thing on it. But the truth is those things are really tall and I'm really short and they are very top heavy.
Like Toby just said, though, if you're not at least 5'10", you'll be challenged to mountain. And I agree with that because I actually saw that. I was like, man, this guy's shorter than me. How the hell is he going to do
that? That's me. I'm 5'7". And for me, I've actually sat on one and I have to be like one leg on one side and one on the peg and to like actually hold it up. So because I'm too small to put both my feet down on the ground at the same time.
Then I'd really have issues because I'm only 5'4".
Yeah, so it's hard. Yeah.
I'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm falling.
But you can do it. You can do it. You can be, 5'1" doing it. It's just a matter of skill and of being able to, do that over and over again and being used to it.
Yeah, I'd be the one busting out the retractable stepladder.
Yep.
There is actually a riding technique that a lot of the adventure riders practice, which is they'll stand next to the bike, get it rolling, and then hop up on it, having one foot on the peg.
Yep, they'll have both and then hop over, right?
Yeah.
Be riding it. Yep.
Now, that's something I'm not willing to try on my bikes.
Mm-hmm.
But on something like that, I'd be willing to try because it's designed for ruggedness.
It's true. It's meant to drop a few times, because you're going to drop it. If you're going to be doing adventure, anything, you're going to drop those in the dirt anyways, but they're top heavy as it is. So you're definitely going to feel it. If it starts going, you're probably going to go with it.
And if I want to road test it, I want to take it on a road and I want to take it on a trail. I want to take it in every mode that bike is meant to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think, Dr. Harley? This is kind of reminiscent of our era during the AMF years where they were just throwing everything and anything out there to see if it sticks. Is that what they're doing with the adventure bike category? They're seeing if it sticks, or are they going to move on to a different culture within the scene?
I think they're moving on with a different culture because they're seeing a market share they didn't have. And for them to grow as a company, they needed to expand their market share, which would have been into the adventure riding.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very well said right there. But you know what I'm talking about. They used to have golf carts and every damn thing going out there.
Yep. But I actually rebuilt the motor in a 3-wheel Harley Davidson golf cart.
No shit.
Yep. Well, let's talk about 3-wheel here. The trikes that they're throwing out there right now. And it looks like it's really catching on. Shit, Chinadoll wants a trike right now.
Yes, I do.
And a lot of women are catching on that. But doesn't that say, well, wait a second. That proves a lot of people's point that a lot of riders are starting to age out when the trikes come up.
Yeah, well, I like the RG3. When they first released it and I saw it on Harley Davidson's release, I was like, that side profile just doesn't look right. There's something off about it. But then when I saw it in person, man, that's a good looking bike. I actually had a client who had the 2022 Apex Road Glide, walked into a dealership, saw the Road Glide 3, immediately traded his bike in on it.
Wow.
And he loves it. It's a nice blue. The bikes handle great. I actually, my wife and I owned a freewheeler at one time because that's what
I got those up. You were talking about the freewheeler Road Glide 3, and then you got the Tri-Glide Ultra right now.
Yep. The Tri-Glide Ultra is historically the Geezer Glide.
Geezer. Yep.
Mm-hmm. When I can't stand upright and walk, that's what I'm going to have. That or a Road Glide 3 or a freewheeler. And I tell you, the Road Glide 3, the styling they did on that for 2023, to me, was a home run with the fairing, the Road Glide fairing with the bigger wheels on the back. And it's just a home run for a design aspect of it. It's a better looking, it's sportier looking, It's even more sportier looking than the freewheeler. The only complaint I have is
it's definitely beautiful for sure.
The only complaint I have is they don't have the 117 engine in it. Why not put your biggest production motor in a trike that has the most weight? It's got to move around.
That's interesting.
Very well said. Now, Chinadel,
yes,
you want a trike.
Yeah.
Personally, I wouldn't spend $40,000 for one. I'd put her on a spider, but
ew, gross. Those are ugly. Shut up. No. Those are weird.
Out of these three that you're seeing right here,
I'm gonna go old fogey with that Tri-Glide.
You like the Tri-Glide. Why is that?
Because it's got the trunk. I gotta have some place to put my purse.
It's the pizza box.
I could tell you from personal experience in a freewheeler, you could fit 230 racks, 2 6 packs, and 3 bags of ice in the trunk and still have room.
Wow. Damn. That's some room.
There's no trunk on that one in the picture.
There is. Yeah, it's there. It's there. It's underneath.
It's right behind the passenger seat.
Yeah.
No, for real?
Yeah, I think you open it and it opens up. Yeah.
It opens up this way.
Yeah.
Because style-wise, I like the freewheeler. But there you go. I was looking at the other one because I could see the big trunk on the back. But if that one's got a hidden trunk, my God, I really want that one now.
And when you look at it from the back, they sell a bumper that you could put on it that it looks like an old 30s roadster with the dual exhaust coming out and a thin round chrome bumper. It is
Hollywood.
Yeah.
China got a freewheeler.
Yeah, not happening.
Damn.
Not happening.
Okay, let's all pitch in. Do a GoFundMe for China for her birthday next year.
Well, you know, with them styles, Dr. Harley, and maybe somebody that is a little worried about riding on two wheels, I think Harley might have hit the bullseye on these trikes that are coming out.
Yeah, I think they're amazing.
You know, women would probably be more comfortable jumping on one of them than, say, a two-wheeler.
Personally, since I've never, you know, I'll just crash a two-wheeler, I'd prefer a three-wheeler.
Well, so that's the thinking right there, exactly.
If you've never ridden a three-wheeler, have you ever ridden a snowmobile?
No.
Okay.
I've ridden a four-wheeler with the bike. You don't mean with a trike.
Yeah, no, it's weird.
It's all handlebars, and it wants to. Yep. If you're in a left-hand turn, it wants to throw you off to the left side.
I got it.
Yeah, it's weird the way it feels when you turn on those things. Yep. You know, you're gonna feel definitely weird.
They actually have a safety course just for trikes.
Wow, didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, man. I just learned something right
there. Sign me up.
Yeah, no idea.
You want to get a rental?
You know what, though? You brought up snowmobiles, and Harley-Davidson used to be in it. And their competitor, Polaris, they're actually the owners of Indian Motorcycles. And they have the biggest company as far as snow machines and stuff. Do you think Indian under Polaris ownership, Dr. Harley, is going to actually give the motor company a run for its money? Because I know a lot of people switching over to Indians.
Well, you know, when you look at Indian as a whole, they've been a here today, gone tomorrow company. They've been bought and sold so many times. You know, you can't get any if you have a legacy Indian, let's say even 2004, right? A 19-year-old motorcycle, which is not that old when you talk about a motorcycle, you can't get parts for it, not even from the aftermarket community. I have a brother who has an 04 Indian, and he had a broken spoke in his rear wheel, and he's one of those people, just replace the wheel. I don't want any more problems. We looked high and low, and we even called the Indian dealerships. They're like, we can't get parts for that. We don't carry parts for that. That's not a Polaris Indian. We only require to carry Polaris Indian, but it's an Indian. Doesn't matter. luckily I was able to find one spoke out of a pile of 300 miscellaneous spokes that was an identical match.
That's
and I had to unlace his wheel and hope nothing else broke to replace that spoke and put a fresh new tire and tube on it.
Well, so, that's one thing with Indy or with Harley that you can count on. At least there's parts for it, even if yeah. they're old.
Yeah.
And no matter where you go, you can have somewhere to stop and have someone actually work on your bike. Let's say for the guys like me that don't work on their bike on the side of the road, you can stop at any Harley dealership in every town, you know, that you break down in. How are you going to be if you're on an Indian or a Victory? How is it going to be on those kind of rides? You know, you're going to have differences of being able to have people that can actually help you.
Yeah,
you know,
that brings up a good point of dealer network. I mean, when you travel along any major interstate, there's more Harley-Davidson dealerships than you can count. I mean, when I go from Connecticut to Daytona, Florida, I pass at least 30 to 40 Harley-Davidson dealerships.
Yep.
I think I've seen one, maybe two Indian dealerships. And even if you're going out west or anywhere in this country or around the world, if you're on your bike and it's a Harley Davidson, then you, God forbid, you have a problem or you need to get your bike serviced because you're on a long journey, you can go get your bike serviced at a dealership or a shop. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're on an Indian and you have a problem, and if you're lucky enough that it's covered under warranty, you're going to have a hard time getting towed to the closest dealer.
Because well, I think
they're not going to be 50 miles. They might be 200 miles.
Well, I think you bring up an excellent point right there is the dealer network. And, I have to admit, I've never been in an Indian dealership. But I know there's an experience when you walk into a Harley dealership, regardless of, you know, if you're an older guy like me making fun of the yups and all that stuff. Besides that, you got to admit, Chinadow, that they are pretty damn good, some of these dealerships.
Some of them are. I mean, there's a few that I would never revisit, but I know, I mean, the one closest to us, I'll go there any day of the week. But then you go out to the Woodstock location, yeah, no, I won't go back.
It's there. A different attitude, but I'm talking generalities where they have, it's not, you know, I do love the old 90s Harley Davidson, you know, the shop thrown in the middle of a retail center, you know, it's only like 3,000 square feet, but now they look like Disneylands in there.
Megaland.
You know, it's great for gearheads like me and Dr. Harley and stuff. We look around like, yeah, we get a, you know, a hard on looking around, but there's that distinctive type of feeling when you walk into a dealership.
Yeah, I mean, when I was coming up in my mechanical career, I worked for Bill's Harley Davidson in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which is no longer around. I was working there when I was 17 years old as a parts runner for the mechanics. And when I turned 18, because you can't be a mechanic in the state of Connecticut unless you're 18 years old, on my 18th birthday, I was gifted a lift and told to bring my tools in and get to work. You know, time to earn my keep, as Bill said. But then you had maybe two or three different t-shirts for sale right behind the parts counter. Mm-hmm. And you might have had half a dozen new motorcycles in the showroom, and they were already sold. And if you wanted a brand new Harley, you had to order it and wait for it to come in.
Yeah, that was the start of 1994. I remember how hardcore that was. You couldn't get a damn new bike for anything.
Now you walk in, you've got
88.
You've got 300 bikes sitting in one sitting room. You know, you walk in, there's 300 brand new bikes, you know, and you're just going, wow, like all these motorcycles here. And every time I go into a Harley dealer, I see all these brand new bikes. I go, are they even going to sell these things?
Like, well, back in our day, those things were hard to come by, man. When it first started out in 88, like Harley said, it got worse in 94. Mm-hmm. But like Jake said, when his wife walks into a Harley dealer, it has a better atmosphere than an Indian one, which was dead and quiet.
Yep.
Yeah. I walked into an Indian dealership, and the next state over in my state, and I could tell you there were very few bikes, very few people willing to help you. You walk in, they're like, "Hey,"
and I was just
looking around. Nobody cared to acknowledge me or even tried to sell me anything.
Do you think, China, now that Harley hit the mark where it got its dealership involved with its clientele, with throwing different events, like ours, Kegel, man, they throw everything over there.
Yeah, it's smart. Every time there's an event, the first person that they, like one of the guys that actually sold Hollywood the last bike that he got, shows up at my work and hands me event paperwork and says, "Can you get your old man to show up at this?" And yeah. I'm like, "I'll give it to him." But it's like they have so many events like almost every other weekend. Even they try to even have events in the wintertime to keep the door, you know, keep everything flowing, you know, to keep people coming in. And their events actually are pretty spectacular.
Yeah. Compared to an Indian dealer that don't have that I don't think there's that connection with the motorcycle.
The community aspect, you know, the that comes with Harley, you know, that's what you get with Harley, really, is that community as well. You're not just buying a motorcycle, you're really getting a community aspect out of it.
Yeah.
Now, motorcycle is life, Dr. Harley. Why do you think that some people feel the way he does, where he says Harley needs to rebrand? Do you think Harley needs to rebrand itself?
No, I don't think so. I think it needs to rediscover itself and rediscover who their core clients are and not have people steering the ship that really don't know the core, their core clientele.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about Harley Davidson Financial? Now, a lot of people have a lot of issues, and I just seen Chasing Ghost put it up there as far as Harley Davidson financing its own motorcycle, which, you know, most cars do that, you know, car manufacturers like Ford, Chevy and all that. But I always thought, and this is the way I'm always going to think, if you enter into a contract, you agree to pay that contract. Mm-hmm. And Harley Davidson has a better atmosphere, and it leads you to financing HDFS, insane interest, spend $50,000 on a $20,000 soft tail after warranty. But didn't you enter into that? And you see a lot of more people getting into Harleys because of the HDFS.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest with you. Both my bikes are financed through Harley Davidson. Just because of the ease of, okay, here's a deposit, give me the VIN, let me go to my credit union, get the loan, come back. It's just so much easier to walk in, let them do the financing, do everything right then and there. Done. Mm-hmm. As far as the new lease program Harley came out with, I don't think they have their clientele best interest, because you're limited to 5,000 miles a year. And, you know, you can't modify it. And if you do, you have to put it back to its original state when you picked it up and you turn it in.
Mm-hmm. But what do you think about those that complain about Harley Davidson Financial? Is it Harley Davidson Financial's fault, or is it theirs for going into a contract like that? And has Harley Davidson Financial made it easier to own a Harley?
They definitely made it easier, but you also got to watch the dealerships, because it's legal for the dealerships to mark up the interest rate. So let's say you filled out the contract and Harley Davidson Financial come back says, yes, you're approved at 6.5%. Right. The finance guy does his thing, talks to the salesman. The salesman says, "Hey, awesome. We got you approved. We got you approved at 11%.
Yep. Yep.
And you sign that paperwork. Now the difference between that 6.5% and 11.5%, that 5% the dealership gets, that's how the dealerships make money. And to me, that is a stealership, not a dealership.
I agree.
Very well said right there.
With the financial aspect, though, it's going to be hard, though, because they're predicting even just this next year that we're going to have the most amount of cars being repossessed that's ever happened. And that's going to be coming down very soon to motorcycles as well. I mean, motorcycles.
Oh, it already is because.
Well, that's it is. It is because it we are a luxury item. You know, we're not like one of those things. So it's already hard. It's already hard enough to get that approval on that loan. It's actually harder to get approved on a loan for a motorcycle than it is for a car. People didn't know that, you know, motorcycles are going to get harder and harder to get in our current state. You know, right now it's going to be harder and harder to finance.
Do you think, Chinadel, that the motor company should stick to just selling a product it's motorcycles, or do you think they should get into the finance business?
Me personally, I like when you go into Harley and you can get it all done in a one-stop shop.
So you agree that they should stick with the finance option?
Yeah, but I think everybody needs to read their contracts before they sign them. That's just it, though, is people are not reading the fine lines and in between the lines, and they're just grabbing the paper, signing it, and handing it back.
True.
Look it over before you sign it.
Yeah. And if you know what?
Questions, question it before you sign it.
And if you know you got good credit, and they come up and they come at you with 11.5 or 15 or 20%, hey, let me see the bank offer.
Right. Let's see the side by side because you
let's see
you,
the bank offer. What are the
you
bank
can't just give me that
interest? Because right. If the bank's offering me, 6.5% to finance it, and you're telling me it's 11.5%. Why should I go with you so you can mark up the interest rate and I could just go to my credit union, get that 6.5%.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that should be legal, Dr. Harley?
No, it shouldn't be, but it is.
Do you think
it's legal for any shop to mark up any part that they sell you 2.5 times? So if that part is $100, they could charge you $250 legally.
Do you think Harley Davidson should protect its clientele at that point and say, you know what, this is what we're offering through our finance. You're not going to mark it up. You're making us look bad. Because that's a big complaint a lot of people say is Harley Davidson Financial is a scam where they don't step back, like you said, and say, well, wait a second. It was the dealership that marked it up this high.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and that falls down to the buyer, not Harley Davidson. And the dealer's practice is a dealer's practice. And whether I agree with it or not, or I think it's honorable or not, that's up for debate. But, it comes down to the person buying. If you sit there and says, hey, look, I want to see the bank offer. What did the bank actually offer? And then you sit down with the finance guy, says, okay, you ran my credit. The bank approved it at this rate. Let me see it. Because
I think a lot of people want that. Go ahead. Sorry.
There's going to be paperwork that the bank sent, whether most likely electronically, to the dealership. Hey, I want to see it.
I think a lot of the times they forget. I think they're forgetting a lot of the time when they're at the finance table and they're about to sign. It's either they're too excited or they forget that they're the actual buyer as well. You know, like don't forget that I'm the customer, you know, like, and sometimes it can feel like while you're in a steelership, it can now feel like the roles have turned. Now all of a sudden, they're the customer almost, and that's kind of what you don't want happening. You want them to cater to you. Make sure they're not bullying you around.
And, sure. And by the time you get into the finance guy, you're in that honeymoon phase. You're already planning what ride you're going to do with this new motorcycle, modifications you're going to do this motorcycle. I mean, when I bought my CVO, my wife was talking about, hey, this is great. We'll take it to Laconia. We're going to take it down to Gettysburg. We bought a nice brand new motorcycle. I'm going to be doing this, and this to it. We're in that honeymoon phase, and people don't think of, they're not focused. They sit there in la la land, and they're just saying, okay, just get me on this bike so mm-hmm. I can fulfill these short term dreams that I just had.
And if you know what, Chinadel, you were with me when I got the CVO. You weren't with me with my other bikes.
No.
But do you agree what he said? You were not, you were already thinking, okay, where are we going to ride and all that type of stuff.
I was. Yeah.
Totally.
I was. That's why he kicked me out of the room when he went in the finance office.
Yep. Yep. You're not allowed to be here. No eyes looking. You can't be making
He literally kicked me out of the room because I'm sitting there going, well, can we take it to Tomahawk? We need to go here. We need to go here. We need to go here. And he's like, China, go pick out your free shirts and get out.
And that, and I think that's a tactic of not only dealerships with motorcycles, but with cars, is they want you distracted.
Yes,
absolutely.
They want
it's a science.
That's how the dealerships make their money, is through all the markups, not off the sale of the vehicle. It's through the markups. It's through the upsales of the VIP service for the free oil changes. They're not free, by the way, because they figured if you did two oil changes for that 5 years, they're still making money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, the tires for life, you know, the tire and wheel protection. Okay. How many people actually use it? I mean, there's maybe 3 out of 10 people who bend a wheel or, you know, do something with their tires where they need to get a free tire.
Well, true.
You paid for that.
Well,
you prepaid for that.
That's just like when they add like all these other fees and stuff on there. And he was looking at it going, what the hell is this for?
Mm-hmm. What is this charge?
What is this for? What is this for? And he questioned a bunch of the different
things.
Well,
you got to be educated. And
absolutely.
If you're educated going into that finance room, you're going to get a lot of them fees knocked off right away.
Well, there's times I've seen those fees where they're like $1,000 for paperwork. What do you mean $1,000 for paperwork, dude? It's like, you cannot charge me that much for paperwork. There's no way that it's worth that much. You know, absolutely. There's all sorts of weird charges and
delivery fees and all that.
And all sorts of weird stuff that they sell you at the end as well. Like, oh, we'll do this. We'll do this. And there's all these things that you try to tack on. And that's where they really make their money.
Yeah. Sure, like you were saying. They try to do the delivery fees and all that. And it's like, dude, I don't need no delivery fee. I'm taking it here.
Yeah. I'm accepting it.
I don't need it delivered.
I'm taking it off of your hands. I know. So.
Yeah. So they do fees. And if you're not paying attention and you're distracted, that's why I'm a distraction. So I get kicked out because I will distract him and he will not pay attention to what he's doing. But he's also knowledgeable on all the crap they're going to try and pull.
Yep.
You know, and that's the biggest thing. If you're not paying attention and you're easily distracted, I'm sorry, ladies, but you got to leave the room because I am a big distraction. I'm not going to lie. Because I'm like, well, where are you going to go? Are you going to ride it when we get home? What are we going to do?
let's bring this back around a full circle, Dr. Harley. What is Harley Davidson's future?
Well, I actually had conversations in Milwaukee at the 120th with people at Harley Davidson Corporate. As a consumer, as Dr. Harley, YouTube and everything. And I said to him, look, you guys are about ready to miss the boat on the retro. Everybody is, all the manufacturers and automotive are doing retro vehicles. Now, if you did a limited retro run, and I'm not talking, you know, the Icon Collection or anything like that. Let's talk a true retro. If Harley came out for 1 year, let's say they did 2,000 motorcycles as a flathead. You will sell out in a heartbeat. And then 2 years later, you do the knucklehead. Then 2 years after that, you do the panhead. Then 2 years after that, you do the shovelhead. And 2 years after that, you do the Evo. But you take those motors with modern engineering and technology, you put it in the bike, and you could build a standard motorcycle. And I guarantee you, Harley would sell out so fast, because pre-orders will be done before they even assemble the first one. And you will get, you know, 40, 50 grand for that motorcycle, because people who love Harley Davidson would love to have a true Harley Davidson knucklehead.
Well, you know what?
Who's going to spend 40 grand on a motor?
I like douches.
Exactly. And I was just going to bring this up to you, Dr. Harley. Deuce just said, how did electric motorcycles not even come up in this discussion about the future yet? And what you're seeing right now, and this is just my opinion, even car makers are getting away from them. I think they're falling flat on their face because they're not, you know, a logical step to go into electric and look at LiveWire. What are your thoughts, Harley?
Well, actually, LiveWire is now its own company. It's no longer owned by Harley-Davidson. They're a standalone company that's sold through only certain Harley-Davidson dealerships. So when you go look at a brand new LiveWire, it does not have the barn shield or say Harley-Davidson anywhere on it. It says LiveWire. And that happened last year.
Damn. And
they are not selling like they hoped they would. You know, that 2 years ago when that LiveWire caught fire in Daytona during bike week after the mechanic worked on it, I think that really put a big hit because that video went viral on the LiveWire brand. You know, and honestly, I've ridden a LiveWire and I got on it, had 3/4 charge, and it's telling me 75 miles remaining. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going, at 3/4 charge, simple math, 75 miles remaining. That means I get 100 miles on a charge.
That's it.
If I go for a ride, it's got to be at least 100 miles in one direction minimum.
Right. You expect me to only go 50 miles that way and then 50 miles back this way? I have to in order. I can't leave this vicinity.
And these electric cars, I saw a guy get his Tesla towed to a rest stop on Interstate 95 because it was dead. And he looked at me and says, yeah, look at all the money I'm saving on gas. I'm like, yeah, but it takes me 2 minutes to fill up my gas and go, man. You're going to be here for what? 8 hours? He goes, no, six.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about? I don't think electric motorcycles are the future. I really don't.
I don't.
I like the one comment.
The new generation want the old school bikes now.
Well, they do. They want the
rest. And that is the truth. Is like our guys want, like, definitely my generation in the Harley aspect. I do not think Harley will make way and moves with electric shit. That's just honest.
Well, they already offloaded the LiveWire, but I think what old man Zombie just said, hybrids. What do you think about that? You think that's in the future of vehicles going forward, cars, bikes, trucks?
It is definitely going forward going to be something that's going to be utilized. Now, is it something that I want? No, I don't like the hybrid thought. I don't really like using both electric and machine gas at the same time or whatever, or saving and doing all that. I don't need to do that. For me, I'm totally fine just riding my normal, whether it be a V-twin or be an Evo or something like that. Like, I'd way rather have something like that than have something that's electric.
I think they should look at alternative fuels. Whether they go into a biofuel, they go into an E85. Automotive manufacturers are looking back into the hydrogen cars again.
Yep.
Alternate fuels might be the way to go. I mean, propane. I mean, how many city buses are running on propane? Exactly. You could run a city bus on propane. You could definitely run a motorcycle.
How would that affect, though, Harley-Davidson as far as guy? Do you think our generation has to grow out of it and then that concept pushed on to Mike's generation because they're more accepting of alternatives?
Well, I think it'd be all of attrition. I mean, by the time that technology really comes to play, our generation will be either gone or close to being gone. And Mike's generation will be, you know, our age, if not maybe a little older. Mm-hmm. So the generation behind Mike would actually accept it and run with it and do what they have to do. But I think they really need to start looking at it and developing that technology, because it just doesn't happen overnight.
It's true.
What do you think, Johnny? You think it'd be a culture shock to have a Harley? You pull up right now to a gas pump, you get a good American Saudi bought oil, or you go in and get something like propane, and I like the propane ideal, but this electric stuff I don't like. do you think that would change the culture of Harley Davidson?
I think it would definitely change the culture. I think they'd sell less bikes.
And is it because it's built on an image, Mike, or what?
I think so. Yeah, because a lot of us that are riding these at the at this age, we had like an just kind of like how you guys grow up in a certain time era and you guys are like remembering certain things. We do too. And so for me, the thought of having like a sewing machine of a motorcycle that is like, you know, like to me, that doesn't do anything for me. Like the kids nowadays, my age, they actually want like some power. These kids actually want loud pipes. They're not sitting here wanting the biodiesel, and they're not wanting hydrogen and stuff like that. These kids are wanting to like get out there and rip wheelies and stuff on them.
Rather. Yeah, but you know what? I have to agree with Dr. Harley, man. You come up with something like a propane, and the cost effectiveness, maybe, know, it's really there. Instead of you know, what are you getting, 60 miles a gallon if you're good? I just like,
well, why do you think hydrogen came out, right? Hydrogen came out and did the same thing. And I'm the first one that can attest about hydrogen products, as I actually own a hydrogen product, that out of the 5 kilograms that you can fill it up, you know, it goes by weight, not by, you know, the amount, like gallon, goes by weight of mass. So when you're filling it up at 5 kilograms at $36 a kilogram, you know, you're spending, you know, $166 to $200 per fill up. And that technology, and it's beautiful technology, but it only gets you 240 miles if you drive it like a granny. But realistically, you're only getting 180 miles per tank because you're the way that you drive normally.
Well, I saw somebody bring up in the comments, I mean, people aren't even thinking, like, for the electric bikes, are you even thinking, what about traffic? What if you're in bumper-to-bumper traffic? How are you going to get from point A to point B if you're stuck in traffic? Like, if you're driving it in Chicago or you're driving it in one of the big cities, how are you going to get from point A to point B without your shit dying?
Right over here in Cali, we just lane split. See you guys.
Yeah, well, that's not logical where we're at.
I know. Well, for the rest of the country, isn't.
Speaking of California with California logic, earlier this summer,
the eye roll there.
The summer, they announced by 2035, no more new gasoline vehicles will be sold. Only electric vehicles will be sold. And then a week later, they're telling everybody not to charge their cars or turn up their AC because the grid can't hold it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is it? You can't
make it up.
You can't have both, guys, and you can't make that up. That is a true statement that came out of California.
They keep pushing it back too. They keep, like, I know that they were trying to do that earlier, and they had it, I think, set for either 2025 or 2030 or something like that. I can't remember, but I do know that they keep pushing that stuff back, you know, because I don't think it's realistic.
I think Dr. Harley Davidson learned this lesson. That's why they offloaded LiveWire and only kept a major interest in the stock.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, I think if they really developed that technology where you can get further distance out of a charge, out of a smaller battery, I mean, they would be a better option. I mean, they just started. I mean, electric cars have been around for, what, at least 10 years now? And now they finally have a way to recycle these batteries.
Just now.
Lithium ion batteries that have been in all of our power tools and flashlights and everything for 20 years. Now they have a way to recycle them instead of filling a landfill.
Yep. They were doing more harm than the petroleum products. But
yep.
So final question here. We've been going about an hour and a half here.
Yep.
30 years from now, what's Harley's future, Mike?
I really see Harley going backwards. That's how I see it. Is they're going to go more of the retro stuff that way. Like they're going to go and stick more towards what the original American style was. That's how I see it. Now, of course, are they going to try to innovate? Are they going to try to do all that stuff? Yes, I do really think that that's what they're going to do. But I see it as a being a realist. I see it not really being marketable, being either a hybrid or being electric. I really don't see any of us buying any of that. I don't see myself buying that. I don't really see anybody in the chat buying any of that kind of stuff. So I don't really know where we're going to be. It's kind of a confusing thing to answer. But in my honest opinion, I think it's going to be all fuel, just still going to be fossil fuels 30 years
from now. Do you think China down in 30 years, Harley's going to stick with its core base, which is your middle-aged riders, and that's best where they should stick?
I really would hope that Harley would target those younger than Mikey.
That'd be smart.
And get that younger generation out on those bikes. And I personally think, because I love the bikes that we have, don't get me wrong. I love the baggers. I love that kind of stuff. But at the same time, those old school bikes, like all the panheads and all, oh my God, those bikes are gorgeous. They need to bring back the old school, because I think the old school is going to attract the younger generation.
I got 30
years. 30 years from now, Dr. Harley.
Well, 30 years from now, hopefully I'm still on two wheels. Let's put it that way. I'll be 83.
There's a lot that are 100 still riding.
I know, but, you know, 25 years in the military ages you quicker. So.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm hoping I'm still on two. If not, I'm definitely on three, and it will be a trike, a real trike, not a, you know, an abomination snowmobile kind of trike. It'd be a real trike.
Old Volkswagen or
a VW. Yeah.
I'd take one of those, but you know, a freewheeler or a Roguelite 3, something like that. Absolutely. Or an old VW trike. Absolutely. 30 years from now. But stretch as far as end. Harley goes, I'm hoping 30 years from now, Harley Davidson is celebrating their 150th anniversary. I hope that, they steer the Harley-Davidson ship in the right direction to keep them around that long, whether, you know, they become a motor clothes company instead of a motor company. So I think that with Harley-Davidson, I hope that they will be around, and hopefully they make the right decisions that they stay around. I mean, people like Willie G, I mean, God bless him, man's in his 80s. He's not going to be around to sit there and look at him and says, what are you doing? You're stupid.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Hollywood, what about you?
I'm like Dr. Harley. I hope they're going to be around. It's the only bike I really, you know, I've had all kinds of bikes, all makes and models of bikes, but Harley Davidson always been in my blood, and I hope they make it to their 150. It's just going to take a lot of innovation with the younger ones to keep ahead of the curve. Because if they don't, they're going to end up on their asses and out of business like Indian was 50 times. Chasing Ghost, if you want a good technical info on building electric bikes, watch his interview with Full Metal Corgi. It's titled, He Built an Electric Bike at Dr. Harley. And we got Dr. Harley has his own YouTube channel.
That's right.
So you all got to go out there, look at it. There's a lot of good Harley Davidson channels out there, a lot of good technical ones that you can get your information from and have these type.
And he is one of them. He is one of them down there. So Dr. Harley is the man to check out for parts and all the mechanical work and stuff. He's very, very intelligent in that aspect.
Exactly. So get into these other creators, if you will. I know on Insane Throttle, we're doing just totally different stuff now than what we're you guys might be used to. I find this more enjoyable. I find it actually, this is what everybody likes talking about, is their motorcycles after all. But what do you guys think? Put it in all the channels, comment sections about what do you think Harley Davidson's future is. I like to say thanks having Dr. Harley on the show and stuff. We'll be looking forward to having him on more. China Doll as well, as you know, she did awesome for the 50th birthday today and stuff. And Mike, as always, getting a kick-ass guest, man. Always getting a kick-ass guest. But that's the show for today. Motorcycle Madhouse will be tomorrow. You to catch it out at the Morning Madhouse at 8:15 Central Standard Time. And thanks, everybody. Thanks, the panel. You guys rocked, man. You really did.
And that's it for a Motorcycle Madhouse Morning Mayhem. Don't forget to visit us on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, and all major podcast platforms for all the replays of Motorcycle Madhouse.